Gordon McLaughlin, good afternoon.
G'day, how are you?
Just checking all the microphones around. Steve McCabe, how are you?
Not so bad, thank you.
Susan Shortley, Gordon and Steve on the panel. So there's a lot on the panel today. John Banks committed to trial. The Man Booker Prize comes to New Zealand again. Can Len Brown survive? Polling results as well on our attitudes towards being spied on, compulsory voting and our favourite occupations, the occupations we respect most. Should they be looking for the yacht Nina again? And if we get time, the cost of the Kahangarea case that went before the Waitangi Tribunal. So a pretty full board between 4 and 5 with Stephen Gordon. Susan Baldacci with What the World is Talking About. Good afternoon, Susan.
Hello, Jim. Well, we're going to start today with a story. It's one of those when you read, you think, what else do we not know about? Scientists have discovered a new type of Botox, and they say it is the deadliest substance known to man. Mm. And Botox is basically a botulism. It's a botulism type toxin. Mm. And they discovered this in the feces of a child who had botulism. It's a new strain they knew nothing about. Now, Botox A and B strains are what, you know, people inject into their skin for cosmetic reasons. Yeah. This is Botox H. So there's lots Whoa. That come before this. It is so deadly that inhaling 13th billionth gram, just a 13th of a billionth gram will kill you.
They're just trying to frighten us.
Well, they're succeeding.
And just stay away from children's, you know what, and you'll be fine. No.
Imagine if you broke a vial of it in the middle of a city.
Well, this is the reason why scientists are not releasing the DNA sequence. They're withholding it until they can discover an antidote, because that's exactly right. They don't want people to know exactly what it is.
Oh, Gordon, this is the plot for a novel shortly, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it doesn't...
A short one, I would say.
One with an early ending.
But you would wonder, I mean, what else do we not know about? There's just... Yeah. What else can kill us that we don't know about?
Botox H.
Botox H.
Thank you. Cheerful news.
So it actually knows the alphabet as well, which is promising. It's intelligent.
Yeah.
It's an intelligent toxin.
Now, Hollywood actors are well known for Botox, but what they are not so well known for is being generous to each other. But that's exactly what Anthony Hopkins has done. He has sent a letter to Bryan Cranston, who is in the cast of Breaking Bad. And he just, you know, he didn't have to do it, but he sent a letter saying, I've just finished a marathon of watching Breaking Bad from episode 1 of the first season to the last 8 episodes of the 6 seasons, and I have never watched anything like it. Brilliant. The best acting I have ever seen. Amazing.
You got a letter like that from Eero once, I think, didn't you?
Well, they compared my teaching to Breaking Bad. Yeah. Yes, that'd be about right. Yeah.
So he says you're the best actor. This is the best acting performance I've ever seen.
I don't watch Breaking Bad. I mean, I've heard a lot about it and people talk about it.
I don't either.
I feel like it's one of those things that I'm missing out on.
Yeah, well, we felt the same way, so we just started watching it about 2 weeks ago. And he says he watched the entire lot in one go.
Yeah.
He deserves a medal. It is arduous.
Yes. Is it arduous?
Oh, it's very, very good, but it's not light relief. You need a good sitcom to watch at the end of it to cleanse the palate. You don't go to bed after it. It's good, but it's brutal.
I'm glad I'm not watching it.
It's one of those that you think, I'll get round to it in the summer holidays, isn't it?
Waste
of time.
Well, he says,
No, it's winter watching, very definitely. It's not light summer viewing at all.
Right.
He says, I know there's so much smoke blowing and, you know what, in this business, and I've sort of lost belief in anything, but this work of yours is absolutely stunning. So you cannot get better than that, can you, in terms of a endorsement?
From Sir Anthony himself.
Yeah, from Sir Anthony himself. Mr. Silence of the Lambs and so many other movies. And when it comes to movies, where you sit in the movie theater can tell you a lot about yourself. Do you have a favorite place that you sit in the movie theater, Gordon?
Yeah, I like to be well up the back, actually, because I've got, since my cataracts were done, I can see to the end of the world.
Can you?
And I like to be level with it, at least level with the screen. Yeah.
I like to be towards the back.
And Steve, where do you like to be?
Next to my wife, preferably.
And I like to be on the aisle.
Yeah, me too.
I like to be on the aisle too. Well, if you like to be in the center, directly in front of the screen, but in the center somewhere in the movie theater, you're either absurdly organized or you are really confident and decisive. So organized, confident, and decisive.
Yes.
It shuts us out.
The back seats, sitting up the back, suggests you're calm and collected, but slightly timid and afraid of being influenced by others.
Oh, yeah, right.
I can't remember anybody calling me timid.
No, it's not an adjective that springs to mind with you.
Now, those front rowers who sit directly in front of the screen, sociable person who wants to be connected with others constantly.
Yeah, I've heard redness test.
When you're sitting in the front row, you're not so much watching it. You're in it, really, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's usually teenagers on the phones. That's where they're connected. They're tweeting the story of the film to their mates.
Yeah, this is all from a Japanese psychologist who's done the analysis. So, now, if you like to be in the middle rows of the theater but off to one side, that means you crave personal space and only gravitate towards people you feel you can be yourself around.
Yeah, that's me.
Is that you?
Oh, I think so.
Okay. And if you like to sit in one of the back corners, you want to know everything that's going on, but you don't have confidence to get involved yourself.
Ah.
This is Japanese cinemas that they're surveying.
Well, this is a Japanese psychologist.
Japanese cinemas actually run in a very, very different way from New Zealand ones. You don't buy a ticket for a showing at a cinema. You buy a ticket for a film. And you can buy it, say, from a local convenience store, a dairy. And then you show up at a cinema and say, I've got a ticket for whatever film it might be, as long as I go and watch this film. And so they routinely sell out. And so what you left and end up doing is queuing in the foyer to get into the next showing.
Ah.
And what they often do there is subtitle the films. Obviously, you know, the foreign language films, the English ones, they're subtitled. And so there's no concern about the sound spilling out from the auditorium. And I've had a lot of films ruined when I was living in Tokyo, by waiting outside. And I'd hear the final scene of the film.
Oh, because you knew.
Because I couldn't understand what was going on. It's a very strange experience.
That's funny. Right, what's next?
Well, where you sit in the movie theater may say a lot about you, and what you name your children could potentially say a lot about you, too. And there's researchers who are concerned about what they're saying about this latest generation. The narcissistic naming trend is taking over, according to some researchers. Names like King and Prince and Princess and Messiah and Beautiful.
Messiah.
Messiah is ranked the 387th most popular name. That's up 246 spots from last year.
No pressure when you give your child the name
no
Messiah.
Pressure. No pressure. Or Princess, you know, no pressure. You're just the Princess forever.
Oh, Princess.
It was bad enough and there's only one Messiah, wasn't it, really? How complicated is this?
Do you ever get the mother saying to you, you're not the Messiah, you're a very naughty boy.
Just a naughty boy.
I knew a bank robber.
Someone had to do it.
I knew a bank robber in New Zealand whose name was Raymond Anzac Belgium Sykes.
Really?
Yeah.
His father was involved
in the First World War. Okay. Raymond Anzac Belgium Sykes, yeah.
You see, that princess, there's more pressure on princess than prince, too. Princess, more neutral, I think.
Or beautiful. I mean, just having to explain that your whole life, that my name is beautiful.
Yeah, you better be beautiful.
Yeah, you know, that's talk about pressure.
You'd have to be in love with irony, wouldn't you, really?
Yeah.
But, you know, the research is also concerned about this because, of course, narcissism, they say, is, you know, people tend to lack empathy and they're not interested in helping others. These are characteristics that you don't want in your children, so why name them something that is, you know, slightly narcissistic?
I wonder if it's reflective of a more competitive world, this kind of grandiosity. You feel you've got to give your child a leg up with an emphatic...
But does that give them a leg up? I'm not sure.
Probably wouldn't.
No. All right, what's happening to the moose?
Oh, well, you know, every time I think of a moose, I just have to think of Rocky and Bullwinkle. And I have seen moose, you know, crossing the road. And they're in Colorado. That's not where the problem is. But
Fjordland.
There are some moose in Colorado.
Could be some in
possibly
Fjordland.
Well, the moose populations across North America are just dying out, and scientists really can't figure out why. They think that it may have something to do with milder winters doesn't kill off the ticks, and ticks are a real problem, especially in British Columbia and in the eastern United States, where with the population has declined in Minnesota. One head herd went from 4,000 to fewer than 100 since just the 1990s.
Okay.
So that's pretty significant.
Are they ever domesticated?
No, they're actually, like, if you see a deer, Estes Park, Colorado, where the Stanley Hotel is sort of meant to be.
Where the Shining wasn't shot.
Wasn't shot. you see them sort of, you know, if you're walking across the road, they'll be there. If you see a deer cross the road, you're like, oh, look at that cute deer. If you see a moose, you stand behind your car. You don't get near the moose. You don't care about the deer, but you don't get near the moose.
Okay.
So how does such a placid animal become synonymous with Canada?
I don't think they are placid. I don't know. I don't know. There's a lot more of them up there, I suppose.
Canadians fought very honourably in all the wars, I'll have you know.
Not impugning them for a second.
And moose aren't the only ones in trouble. The sardine industry in British Columbia has completely collapsed. $32 million commercial fishery, and now they are coming home after failing to catch a single fish. Some fishermen are not even going out. And this is, you know, back in the 40s, 40,000 tons a year were harvested and no more, and it's having a ripple effect.
It's not the only sardine fishery to collapse.
Well, that, there's the famous Cannery Row.
And there's the South African one that collapsed.
Yeah. Do they know why?
Well, again, they're saying the potential that it is possibly changes in the climate, which means that there's less of the things that sardines feed on, and then there's less of the things that everybody, the other fish feed on that feed on sardines, less of them, that it's a ripple down effect.
Is that where those New Brunswick's, there's a New Brunswick brand. There are Canadian brands of sardine, aren't there?
Yeah. Well, maybe not so much.
I hate them, actually.
Me either.
Oh, I love sardines.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
sardines on toast.
Mm. Oh, yes. I used to like them. They smell.
They're so good for you, though.
Poof.
Are they good for you?
Says Gordon. Now, speaking of smell, what you wear to attract a big cat.
Well, I've never found this works for women being attracted to human men, but apparently there's a photographer from a Natural History Museum of Los Angeles. He wanted to get some really great shots of jaguars, so he needed a scent to attract them. So what did he come up with? Calvin Klein's obsession for men. And it apparently works.
Good heavens.
The jaguars just can't resist it. Women, fine, no worries. I'll stay away from your camera. But the jaguars just love it. And they think that is possibly because it contains a special chemical in it, which is native to nocturnal cats who used to live in Asia and Africa. It's sort of very similar to that. So what does a jaguar do when it smells Calvin Klein obsession for men?
Yes.
It responds by rubbing its own scent on it. So there you go. There's a little image for your heads about the effect of
You don't
Calvin
really
Klein's
want a jaguar
obsession.
Doing that,
no.
though, do you?
You don't want
no.
them close at
so
all,
don't,
actually.
No. Don't go into the wild.
Is there a jaguar repellent? I'd be more interested in that.
Yeah.
Is there any research on how well jaguar pee attracts human females?
I don't know about that either, but it could work. But you never know about these things. So just don't go into the wild with Calvin Klein obsession for men.
So in theory, Calvin Klein obsession for men should also work on panthers, shouldn't it?
Big
leopards?
Big cats. It should work
tigers,
for all of those.
Lions
ooh, and tigers and bears. I don't know about the bears and the
listen,
lions.
Didn't we have last week the discussion about, was it on this show where you were talking about the one zoo in the UK where they're banning zebra print trousers? On their visitors now.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's going to be a whole list of like clothing and perfume you can't wear. You basically have to go into these enclosures completely naked and recently bathed.
Just not in Calvin Klein obsession for men.
Someone questioning your research and saying, are you sure it wasn't a cougar attracted by a Calvin Klein obsession for men?
Oh, you have such a clever audience. Oh, you really do. Yes.
They're quick. Very good. So that's the lot for today. Susan Baldacci, thank you very much for what the world's talking about. So in case you missed it earlier with Gordon and Steve on the panel, we're going to be talking about quite a bit. First of all, the John Banks case going to trial. The Man Booker Prize, as we all know by now, hopefully, coming to New Zealand again with Eleanor Catton. Can Len Brown survive? We'll probably have a reasonably lengthy talk about that. There are some polling results with Emmanuel Kalafatelis about whether we like being spied on, whether we like the idea of compulsory voting, and the occupations we most admire. So there's a lot to discuss, all coming up after the news, the weather, and the mountain forecast.